Baseball season is fast approaching, and the Brew Crew are getting ready for a run at a third straight NL Central title.
It is gone!
This is Brewers Weekly, live from spring training from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
Hello, hello, hello. Let's try this one again. I'm Dom Catronio. We're fighting through all the heat down here in the Valley of the Sun as we're getting ready to bring you the best Brewers coverage around here on your home of the Brewers all spring training long. I'm Dom Catronio. Thanks so much for joining us here tonight and Wednesday and Friday. We have got jam-packed shows every single day. I should say these 3 days. Guests lined up. Here's who you're going to hear from today. You're going to hear from Tobias Myers, Joey Ortiz, Jacob Mizorowski, Brandon Woodruff, and of course, Pat Murphy. On Wednesday, we've got two guests lined up that I'm really excited about. A combination of Aaron Ashby of Rhys Hoskins, maybe Mark Canna, now that that signing is official. We'll also, on Friday, we've got it scheduled with Matt Arnold. Maybe a broadcaster or two may join us in the time being there and hopefully get some time with Christian Yelich, too. And on the Yelly note, we're going to save most of the Yelly conversation for Friday. I know it's on the top of everybody's minds. Let me just calm the waters as quickly as possible here. He's a full participant. I watched him hit batting practice today. He gave me two thumbs up walking back to the clubhouse. He looks fine. He looks like a veteran getting ready for spring training once again, which is exactly the news you want to hear coming off of back surgery. And he told the media at the very start of camp, I expect to be ready for opening day. It is not on his board at all to say, oh, I need a few more days. Something drastic would have to happen between now and opening day for him not to be available, which is great, great news. We'll spend more time with Yelly this on Friday. Like I said, today's a little more pitching-centric, and then we also have Joey Ortiz as well. We're also going to get into Brandon Woodruff. I think that's what I really want to get out of the way today. He'll throw one more time this week. We'll talk about his bullpens and his live sessions and what all that comes up coming up after this next break. But let's start things off with the headlines from these first week and a half of spring training so far. Today, one of those headlines happened right at the start of today's game. Mark Canna has officially been signed to a minor league deal with an invitation to big league camp. Of course, Mark Canna was acquired in a trade 2 seasons ago to come to the Brewers. He really enjoyed his time here, really filled an important role where right-handed, off the bench, can play first, can play the outfield in a pinch. He can DH as well. Great pinch hitter, too, on-base guy. Maybe he doesn't have the power that you may expect at this point in his career. But with the way that Pat Murphy described it to us in the media today, was this is somebody who's going to give a professional at-bat. And there may or may not be a route for him onto the team as it stands right now, but he can go out and earn it. Or maybe we're the camp that he proves to other teams he's ready to go. And if somebody else has a more pressing major league need, they can acquire him from the Brewers. That's the plan with this. Again, that move is official today. We will get a chance to talk to him tomorrow in spring training. Another minor league move that was made earlier this week official, Manuel Margot, same thing, minor league deal with an invite to spring training. He's an outfielder. All of this on the heels of Blake Perkins getting bit by the injury bug. He has a broken right shin. His tibia has a fracture in it from a foul ball off of his right leg. That was in a live AB session against Freddie Peralta last week. Truly a fluke accident, in the words of Blake Perkins, that even if he was wearing a shin guard, it wouldn't have mattered. It hit just below his knee. I know we've heard that story before of a Brewers outfielder getting hit in the leg and having a fracture. However, if there's a position that the Brewers have depth in, it is the outfield. And quite frankly, with Perkins going down, best case scenario for him is probably early May at this point because he's got to let it heal for 3 weeks. He says it is healing properly, but then he needs to basically restart spring training for himself and ramp up to get ready to go for the regular season. So if he's not available to play, the Brewers' outfield in the major league seems pretty set, as long as everybody, knock on wood, is going to be healthy at this point, with the combination of Garrett Mitchell, Sal Frelick, Jackson Churio, and of course, Christian Yelich. That means, well, who's going to be playing in AAA? Well, you've got Brewer Hicklin, now you've got Manuel Margot, maybe Mark Canna, but I imagine he's going to be more at first base, maybe sharing time with Ernesto Martinez Jr. if another job doesn't come up for him. But the Brewers needed upper-level depth in AAA for the outfield. That's why the Manuel Margot and Mark Canha signings make a little bit more sense. Look, if Manuel Margot is starting in the outfield for the Brewers in the regular season this year, that means there are injuries like crazy happening to this team. Neither one of them are on the 40-man roster, so keep that in mind. If they suddenly tear up spring training and make a case for them to join the big league ball club. Another bit of headlines. We've played three games. The Brewers are 1-2. Nobody cares about spring training records at this point. Yesterday, we saw the ABS system in place, the challenge system at Salt River Fields. Jorge Alfaro got a successful challenge at one point. I tweeted the video at Dom_Catronio. I love the system. I've been a very vocal proponent for this challenge system. We'll talk about it more maybe one day when it comes actually into regular season, but a reminder for the purists out there, this ABS testing system is only for the spring training and only in select ballparks. Major League Baseball prioritizes the ballparks that have multiple teams in them. So yesterday they were in Scottsdale with the Diamondbacks and Rockies. It's also in Peoria with the Padres and Mariners. It's in Goodyear with the Reds and Guardians. It's in Surprise with the Rangers and Royals. And it's in Glendale with the White Sox and Dodgers. So anytime the Brewers are visitors to one of those teams, the ABS system will be in place. So those are a handful of headlines to get you started here on this Monday edition of Brewers Weekly Special Spring Training Edition. We are going until 10 o'clock Central tonight, and I'd love to have you interact with the show with us too. The phone number, 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. That's the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. Up next, we're going to catch up with Brandon Woodruff and Pat Murphy, reacting to his first handful of bullpen sessions to this point. How's he looking? What's the velo? All of that is coming up next right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Okay, the first of many things to figure out for the Brewers this spring training is what the heck's going on with Brandon Woodruff. Hi, everybody. I'm Dominic Catronio. Thanks for joining us for the first of three shows this week live from spring training. Really looking forward to having some fun here on the air. Brandon Woodruff, caught up with him earlier this week. He had a full media scrum after his last live BP. It was his second live BP in the stadium, facing multiple hitters. This time he reached 26 pitches, all systems point forward. And we'll hear from Woody in just a moment. Here's what Pat Murphy had to say just about letting him get there and giving Woodruff every opportunity to become Brandon Woodruff once again.
Woody's healed. Yeah. Now it's the process of getting back into to his type of, you know, ability to throw the baseball. You know what I mean? Like when you come back from a shoulder injury, it's a slow process. You know what I mean? He can't go out on the mound at 89, 91 and be Woodruff. You know what I mean? He's not built that way. That's not who he is. You know, it's like a running back who doesn't have that first step explosion. You're not going to give him the ball in the same situations. You know what I mean? So Woody's it's going to be a while, and we understand that. That's most shoulder injuries, but hopefully we get Brandon Woodruff back bigger and better later in the season.
The biggest thing to take away from that statement, and Woodruff is about to echo it as well, Woodruff is not going to be on the opening day roster. This is very clear at this point. And we've been preparing for this. We've been hedging for this for the last couple of weeks of understanding. Let's just see how he's doing. Let's just see how his recovery is going. And quite frankly, like I've said this since January when we got the first update about his bullpens, I don't care how many innings he throws in April. Is he available at the end of the season? And is he peaking toward the end of the season and not, oh no, man, he's clearly not the same and trying to get something that isn't there. They're going to give him every opportunity to get innings, in the words of Brandon Woodruff.
No, I have no timeline. With this surgery, especially any shoulder surgery, you have to take time, and you don't exactly know when that day is going to be. Now, if it was like a playoff game and you needed somebody, like, yeah, come on, I would go out there, but that we're so far from that. But no, I have no day in mind. I got to go get innings, whatever that looks like. I can't really comment on when that's going to be in the major leagues. So I got to get game action. I got to recover and go from there. So whatever that looks like, when the time's right, the time will be right.
So this could be some form of hey, you go down to the minors on a rehab assignment. Does that give you enough time? I believe it's 3 weeks is the amount of time he's allowed to spend on a rehab assignment. Does he stay back in extended spring training to get innings in here and then eventually join the team or then go throw in Nashville? Whatever that timeline looks like or how many more innings he needs to get, it's all going to be based on how his body is feeling and how he's bouncing back. Again, the velocity. Some folks are a little overly concerned about it, in my opinion, that he's at 92 miles an hour. I think that's a minor miracle that he's at 92 miles an hour here at the end of February after major shoulder surgery. Surgeries and injuries, they don't follow the Gregorian calendar, right? We put timelines and we put months and we say, oh, well, he hasn't faced live hitters in 18 months. He should be fine by now. Well, as we saw with Aaron Ashby, everyone has different timelines to when they feel normal again. And if he continues to break through scar tissue, if he continues to build up muscle mass, because even watching regular arms, like everyone sort of ramps up together. Not everybody's going to be having adrenaline in their first outings. Woody did talk about the fact that he did have some adrenaline in his first live, seeing William. This is right when pitchers and catchers had reported. And then, you know, there was a little less adrenaline for this last live. He was working with Jorge Alfaro behind the plates. He was, you know, not facing regular big leaguers, but that's a good thing, that he's becoming more normal to it, and his body's recovering like it's supposed to be, which is his big focus.
It's going to take time to fully get everything back, but if I can go out and pitch off the mound, come in the next day and recover good, that's a great day, regardless of what things look like on the mound. Like, recovery is key, and then you just go from there.
This is a shoulder injury that, quite frankly, for other pitchers, has been a career ender. Guys have never been the same after it. They have been extremely cautious with Woodruff, and he was honest earlier in this session about, have you thought about the fact that, like, you do have to be a little more careful given free agency is so close to you? And he says, it haven't really crossed my mind, but I know it's going to be something we talk about at some point this year, and that's why the Brewers and Woodruff understand this is a win-win for both of them. If Woodruff can prove he's healthy, if he can get up to the numbers that maybe he's more comfortable with, if he can get up to 94, 95, I'm not saying he's got to be pumping 97, 98 like he was before he was injured. Hey, that proves, okay, he's healthy. He's good to go. If we're at 92 now, and then in 3 weeks' time, we're down to 88, 87, that's when you raise the alarm bells. Like, whoa, what's going on here? But through this process, and through the patience, and through the pain, and through everything that he's had to go through, Woodruff really has found a new perspective, and we use that word loosely sometimes, but finding perspective of going through a major injury. He's had Tommy John in his younger past before too, but understanding that being this distant from the game for this long, he's found a new way to appreciate and yearn for.
Going through this offseason, there was times where I'm like, this shoulder isn't responding, and then all of a sudden, you look up, you push the intensity, you get sore, you recover, and then you feel better the next time. So, man, yeah, it's wild, and I can't wait. Like, the journey this journey's fun. It sucks having surgery, but on this comeback, you've learned so much about yourself, patience, a lot of other things, and just learning the body has been a big thing, which I think will benefit me in the long run.
Brandon Woodruff deserves every stretch of belief, every stretch of kind of leash to understand the dude is a big league veteran. He's one of the longest tenured Brewers on this team now. Him and Freddy Peralta, right? And then you've got Yelly right behind him. In fact, those are the only three guys remaining from the 2018 NLCS team. He has earned the right to take his time. And again, I will say it over and over all season long until I am blue in the face. I do not care, A, how many innings he throws in spring training. If he's not right in April and you're trying to force it, all that matters is the second half for Brandon Woodruff. What kind of pitcher is he going to be? And I'm not trying to say, oh, this is going to be like a trade deadline acquisition. No, that's not that. If you get Brandon Woodruff 80% of what the old Brandon Woodruff was and building, sign me up for that, because we know what peak Brandon Woodruff looks like. Shutting down great lineups, playoff performer, somebody that you can trust to anchor a rotation. And if everyone around him grows with him too, when it comes to Nestor Cortez getting the pick in front of a elite defense. If you get another great year out of Tobias Myers, if Freddy Peralta posts another 175 innings, maybe even more this season, you have got durability out of your starting staff, including a guy like perhaps Logan Henderson, perhaps a guy like Chad Patrick that can help give the depth that the Brewers needed every bit of last season to give Woodruff a little bit more time. So we're not going to talk about Woodruff much the next couple of days because that is the news. He's going to throw another live this week. The next step for him is an up-down, but still just doing live simulated game stuff on the backfields. And then they'll see where he goes from there. I imagine they'll do a full two-inning simulated game, maybe even three at some point before we even sniff the thought of him coming into a Cactus League game, in which he admitted will bring another spike of adrenaline with him there too. So that's our Brandon Woodruff segment. We're going to talk to another flamethrowing righty coming up next. Jacob Mizorowski, got a chance to catch up with him in the clubhouse yesterday. He is actually throwing in Tuesday's game in Goodyear against the Cleveland Guardians on Tuesday the 25th. So looking forward to hearing how he bounces back from that. I watched his live last week and it looked really sharp. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to overreact. Didn't see any velo ratings or anything like that, but his fastball command was there. And as you hear Miz talk about, it's all about command with him. So Jacob Mizorowski is coming up next. You're listening to Brewers Weekly 2-hour edition. We're going until 10 o'clock tonight right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
Jacob Mizorowski joins us here on Brewers Weekly. Miz, this is a camp that obviously there is maybe a spot, maybe there isn't a spot. There's always competition. How do you view this camp for yourself and what your goals are as far as hopefully making your big league debut at some point this year?
I mean, yeah, it's like you got to understand, like, there is a spot, but at the same time, like, I'm still fighting against five other guys, so it's kind of, you got to understand, like, hey, if it comes, I'm going to AAA again. It is what it is, and you got to just keep grinding through it and understand that it's a part of the process and do your job.
Take me back to last season from AA to AAA. What was clicking for you in Biloxi? And you got it a handful of time in the bullpen as well up in AAA. So let's start in AA. What was working? What got you up to AAA?
I think the biggest thing was just command. I finally understood it and started figuring it out. And I think it was one of those things that you kind of just rolled with. Stuff didn't change. You just got more consistent in the zone and guys started missing still. So it worked.
So, I mean, we hear that with you all the time, and I know you've heard it about command. If it was that easy, we'd have already figured it out right now. So explain to us, maybe the uneducated, of, yes, you throw 100, but you got to know where it's going.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's like anything, you got to know what it's going to do. So you kind of have to aim inside, outside, arm side, glove side, you know, depending on what pitch you're throwing. So it's one of those things that you kind of just got to understand what the ball's going to do out of your hand, and once you figure that out, kind of set, it kind of clicks.
We're talking about a fastball that, you said it just a second ago, is missed in the zone. Like, you're able to trust it in the zone. Did that take time to realize you had a fastball that works like that, that you can sort of put it in the zone and guys will still miss it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you're in junior college and you see it, but I don't think I trusted it as much as I do now. So I think it was one of those things that just over time you start seeing swing and miss after swing and miss after swing and miss, and you start trusting, okay, I can do this. Like, it's something I can rely on and really use to my advantage.
That's something that I thought of when I was watching your live yesterday, is I wonder how many times you've been told to get into an athletic position or, like, field your position or as far as your follow-through. Is that accurate, or is there anything that you ever just kind of get sick of being asked of when it comes to your follow-through?
No, that's 100% correct. Junior college really drilled that one into my head, so it was one of those things that you kind of did to make coach happy, and now it's kind of just there, and I'm happy for it. It's one of those things that you don't really think about, but when it actually does come back to you, you're ready and can make a play.
So now let's go to Nashville. Let's go to the transition that you had at the end of the year, kind of deloading yourself, trying to get some, you know, bullpen outings and try a new role. How did you react to all of that with the Sounds?
I think it was one of those things that you just know the process and just know that they have the best for you and roll with it. I mean, it was fun. Wouldn't change it. Had a lot of fun throwing the bottom of the ninth, and so, you know, it's always a kid's dream to close a game out, but yeah, it's exciting.
We've seen this team do this with prospects like of your caliber. Like when Corbin came up, he was in the bullpen first. When Freddie came up, he was in the bullpen first. Have those conversations happened with you, if, you know, after last year's success, to what this year could hold?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I was in stay ready camp. There was a chance, but, you know, didn't happen. But yeah, no, it's always an option. I'm not against it. As long as I'm in the big leagues, that's my goal. So
when we look back, I remember talking to you last year about how a kid ends up at JUCO that throws as hard as you, and we talked about the draft and Oklahoma State and everything like that. When you look back at your journey now, as you're in your second big league camp, are things getting, I don't want to say easier, but more comfortable, or just sort of understanding how this process is supposed to go?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you get a lot more friends. Like, I know 99% of the guys in this clubhouse, so it's a lot more just like, that's a friend, that's another friend, you know what I mean? So feels comfy.
And when it comes to that rotation that was in Nashville, you've seen them more than maybe guys like us in the media that have seen. I think of, you know, of Henderson, I think of Patrick, I think of Yoho. I mean, you can be their biggest advertiser for right now and your biggest fan. What do the Brewers have coming with those guys?
A lot. That's all I'm going to say, is just a lot. You know, like you said, some of the biggest names in the game right now. I mean, Yoho with his changeup, Hendy just with his stuff, and Patrick with whatever you want to call that, and his just how he is. So, no, there's a lot coming. It's going to be fun.
Jacob Mazurowski joining us here on Brewers Weekly. Appreciate the time. Best of luck this camp.
Of course. Thank you.
Miz, great conversation. Really enjoy our time with him. He's throwing tomorrow, and if he throws tomorrow like he threw in the live, that's going to turn a lot of heads. Now, I imagine it's only going to be one inning, because that's what we've seen generally from every Brewers starter to this point in camp. Freddie threw two innings on the backfields today. They're taking it easy with him, but as we, you know, there's still 24 games, 26 games, or 28 games, I think, if you include split squads. There's still a ridiculous amount of games. So there's plenty of time for these guys to build up their innings like they want. Miz will be one of them, and his first step is tomorrow. Let's talk about some of those AAA arms and a little bit deeper look at the rotation. And then a little bit later, we're going to talk to Tobias Myers, as this first hour has been really pitching heavy. And then we'll shift over to offense and defense heavy in the second hour of today's program. Back with more after this on WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, let's take a picture of the starting rotation, shall we? I'm Dom Catronio. Brewers Weekly go until 10 o'clock tonight, also on Wednesday and also on Friday. The Saudi Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line, 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. A reminder of how things are looking. We just heard from Brandon Woodruff. We've sort of put it out there all but officially. He's not going to be pictured in the opening day roster. So what does that mean for the crew? You've got Freddie Peralta already announced as opening day starter. I imagine Tobias Myers and Nestor Cortez are also going to get starts in opening weekend against the Yankees. You've still got Aaron Civale. That fifth spot is up for grabs. And Aaron Ashby, who pitched yesterday, didn't have his great stuff, but as Pat Murphy put it, it's the first outing of spring training. Then you've still got all of the guys that are fighting for a spot that were added to the 40-man roster or that are not on the 40-man roster. So in the case of Mazurowski, he's not on the 40-man roster. He would need to be added as such, which is currently full, but you can move guys around with injuries and that sort of thing once opening day comes around. But the guys that are on the 40-man roster that are auditioning to fill that fifth spot in the rotation, including Aaron Ashby, are Logan Henderson, who also pitched yesterday out of the bullpen, Carlos Rodriguez, who made his big league debut last season, double Olos. Chad Patrick, who was added. You remember, Patrick was acquired in the trade for Abraham Toro. The Brewers scouting department knows what they're doing. And Elvin Rodriguez, who pitched in Japan this past season. Elvin has been mostly used as a reliever, a little bit as a starter stateside, but he made 32 appearances as a reliever last year in MPB. I imagine that's going to stay more his speed this year. So it's really Patrick, Rodriguez, Henderson as the roster candidates, and you have Mazurowski as a non-roster candidate as well. When it comes to these arms that are on the way, and Murph has been getting more and more eyes on these guys, he knows this this wave that the Brewers player development staff continues to put together. It just seems like another wave keeps coming, and another wave keeps coming. We were talking about it for years with Burns, Woodruff, Peralta. They're coming. These guys are coming, right? And now, then it was Ashby, and then, you know, you had injuries to Ashby, obviously, that have slowed him down, and now you see Mizorowski's coming up next. When D.L. Hall gets through these injuries, maybe he goes to the bullpen, but Henderson and Patrick and Mizorowski are part of this next wave.
Well, more than one of them is going to throw really important innings, but I don't think you sell it. I think you just, they know it. They're here. They watch it. They were in the minor leagues last year when it's happening, and they're like, hey, this is one of our guys up there. He's throwing every day. Hey, he's starting the game three of the playoffs. You know, like, they get it. These are smart guys. They know. Yeah, those are important guys. We're going to have, once again, plenty of guys play on our team this year that have never touched the big leagues. That's exciting. It's fun.
It's super exciting. And watching Chad Patrick's cutter in person today, I think it's a very effective pitch. It's one of his best graded pitches. Watching Logan Henderson's changeup yesterday at Salt River Fields, I was sitting in the scouting seats for his pitches, and I was talking to a scout that I know, and I'm just like, why is it a prerequisite on your resume to pitch for the Brewers and to be a pitching prospect within this org to not be afraid to throw a right-on-right changeup? Because the changeup is Logan Henderson's best pitch, and he threw a great handful of them yesterday against the Rockies. And then if you want to talk about changeups, we got to talk about the relief corps and with a guy like Craig Yoho. I'm going to save more of the bullpen talk for Wednesday's episode, maybe even a little bit later in this episode. But to remember about Craig Yoho is he is also on the 40-man roster. Excuse me, not on the 40-man roster, beg your pardon. He would need to be added if he's going to make the team. And one of that's quite frankly one of the things working against him. Just like Abner Uribe having a suspension to serve also is working against him to make the team out of spring training. Whereas guys like Nick Mears and Yoel Piamps, who have no options remaining, they're going to get precedent to make the team out of spring training because, let's say in Yoel Piamps' case, if it isn't working out, they cut him and bring up one of these guys to add him to the 40-man roster. Thiago Vieira made this team out of spring training last year. With all due respect to Thiago, love talking to him. The main reason he made the team coming out of spring training is because he had no options remaining, and it was either sink or swim, and they ultimately moved on from him, which made room for a guy like Jared Koenig to have the stage and really pitch well down the stretch for the crew. So keep that in mind as we try to figure out the formula of what the bullpen is going to look like. We're going to save that for another day. And one other candidate I forgot to mention that could start games for the Brewers but likely falls into that swingman role is someone like Tyler Alexander, who the Brewers signed out of Rays camp. He was a free agent, signed right at the start when pitchers and catchers reported, also kind of in tandem with D.L. Hall's lat injury. So he's available to pitch for the crew as well. And there's a decision to be made with Tyler Alexander versus Connor Thomas. Thomas is also in that boat of no options because he can't be optioned. He's a Rule 5 pick. So if the Brewers ultimately decide not to have him on their roster, he gets returned to the St. Louis Cardinals. With all that being said, let's talk about that guy that started Game 3 of the wild card, like Pat Murphy just said, Tobias Myers. We catch up with him on the other side of the break. Then we'll take another break. It'll be the news at the top of the hour at 9, and we're right back here after the news as well. So still a whole nother hour of content to go. So up next, you're going to hear from Tobias Myers. Then we're going to have the news, and then we're going to have another hour of Brewers coverage to follow that. So stay with us right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back on Brewers Weekly. I'm Dom Catronio. Please be joined by Tobias Myers here in the Brewers Clubhouse as spring training is well underway, my friend. And to think back to the story of last year, you know, among the first cuts, you know, Murph joked with us that he didn't know your name. Like, there's always a line to it, too. The guy showing up now in a different zone on the clubhouse, a little different locker setup. Compare year one to year two in big league camp.
Year three. Year three, you're right. But yeah, it's a little bit different. It's cooler. I feel more comfortable. I feel more comfortable to like communicate with the guys I've been wanting to for the last couple of years. Even last year, being up with most of the guys, still trying to stay to myself a little bit. I don't want to bother too many people. But now I feel pretty comfortable where I can go and pick the brains I want to pick and just try to get better every day. I think we all have the same mindset, so I think those guys appreciate that too.
We talked to you during the season of what clicked into May and that Detroit start in the flat ground that, you know, kind of got you back in, going in the right direction. How do you grade your 2024 season as an overall? What are you most proud of from what you accomplished last year?
I'm just super happy I was able to, for sure, stay healthy the whole season and just go out and just, I feel like I just really did a pretty good job of keeping all the outside noise away from me and just kind of just trying to focus on what I had to do weekly and daily. And that's the same goal I want to have this year, just take it one day at a time. I'm not trying to look too forward. I'm still focused on February of 25 right now, and we're going one day at a time and just trying to get ready for a long season.
When you look back to the playoff start and five innings, I heard you tell Chris Rose and folks who haven't listened to that podcast, they should, that you emptied the tank. Can you define that for somebody who may not be familiar with that term?
That means you are giving it everything you have, and there is no saving any bullets. It was that could have been the last game of my life. It was everything I had, and I just really wanted to give the team a chance to win. And it was a crazy experience. It was awesome.
Have you ever felt adrenaline like that? I mean, obviously, most people you ever pitched in front of in your life, and just the implication of this is do or die game three, and you're getting the ball, Rook.
Never, honestly, no. It was a couple blackout moments in that game. It's funny, I tell a lot of people who play MLB The Show, when you download the game, they make you play the World Series game from the previous year, and you see all the towels going around, you feel it in the video game, and I was on the mound watching the stands, like, in between innings, and I'm like, this is the MLB The Show, this is crazy. So it was really cool. It was cool to feel that type of adrenaline, but it was also really cool to be able to control it.
When you look back to the year, is there a game or a pitch or just an opponent that, aside from the playoffs, that you're pinching me? It's like, okay, like this is real. Like this is my job now, and I'm supposed to get this guy out or this game we have to win, whatever it may have been.
I don't think there's a specific one. If I had to put my finger on one, it'd probably be that second start against New York. Growing up, that was my favorite team growing up, New York Yankees. I mean, everybody loved Derek Jeter, Alex Rodriguez, that staff they had. It's fun, really fun to watch. So it was just really cool to pitch against those guys. And the lineup that they had last year was second to none. So it was awesome, especially being a second start. It was at home. It was a sold-out game. It was pretty cool.
When you look ahead to 2025, what were the goals of the offseason? Are we talking new pitch mix? Are we talking trying to add even more vert somehow? Or what are we learning about your repertoire and what you want to bring into 2025?
Same repertoire, but definitely if we can keep adding vert, that'd be awesome. but, yeah, just trying to stay healthy, just trying to sharpen the tools. Definitely want to use the pitches that gave me success a little bit more. I think being able to pull out all five at any time is kind of my goal, and that's kind of what we're shooting for now, just kind of crisp, getting everything as crisp as possible and just being able to use everything whenever we want.
Now, finally, on a lighter note, one of the things I'm going to be asking around the clubhouse this spring is it felt like half this team got married this offseason, yours included. So first and foremost, congratulations.
Thank you.
What are your biggest memories or what was your favorite part of the day, aside from the obvious stuff here? I mean, obviously you get to marry and have an amazing celebration, but what are the things, like the little details that you really enjoyed?
I think just stepping away at the end of the wedding and kind of me and my wife stepping away and kind of looking around the room and realizing like how many people came for us and how many people love us. And I got a lot of advice to do that. So being able to kind of consciously remember to do that was pretty cool. And just being able to see like all of our loved ones in one room and they all showed up for us. So it was pretty cool.
Now, I do have to ask you about the tux color. I mean, was there debate? Was there thought? Was there input from your wife? I mean, how did we settle on this sweet kind of different look for the tux?
It was definitely the wife. She did her research. She watches her fair share of reality TV shows, so I'm not going to tell you what show she got it from, but she did get it from a TV show. She saw someone get married in that same exact color, so it was a Florida wedding as well. So it was pretty cool. I didn't really think too much about it until I seen all the pictures and all the comments, and I was like, I guess it was a pretty cool color.
Fantastic. Tobias Myers, congratulations, and best of luck into 2025.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Back with more after this on WTMJ.
Baseball season is fast approaching, and the Brew Crew are getting ready for a run at a third straight NL Central title.
It is gone!
This is Brewers Weekly, live from spring training from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
Hello again, Re-Racket. We got hour number two going until 10 o'clock tonight here on WTMJ. The Saudi Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line, again, 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. We're going to shift this second hour into more of an offense, into thoughts of what we've seen early in camp. Of course, the infield battles, what have we learned? What is there to figure out? So let's just start with a 10,000-foot view of who's in play, who are the candidates, what are we going to be looking for the next month. And I thought today's lineup was, quite frankly, a leading candidate for what we could see on opening day. Here's what we know. First base candidates, Rhys Hoskins and Tyler Black, in the words of Pat Murphy. They expect Black to get the vast majority of his reps at first base. Third base is not going to be in the cards for him as it stands right now in 2025. And in case you're wondering about Tyler Black, why hasn't he played in the game yet? He's dealing with some back tightness. According to the Brewers and according to Tyler, nothing to be alarmed about. He was moving around again today. They expect him in the lineup by the end of the week, maybe even tomorrow or Wednesday. And then we know that Rhys is going to have days that he's DHing. There's going to be days that he just has the day off. So if they can have a viable backup first baseman, that's where Tyler Black has to come in and keep the defensive prowess up for TB. Now, he's still got a lot to learn there, obviously. And maybe the addition of Mark Canha can help ease things for him and give a little bit more time if things don't go according to plan in spring training. Canha is not on the roster, though, but he's officially signed today. He can play all over. We'll see what kind of a role he could serve. Second base, shortstop, and third base is interchangeable of the following names: Bryce Terang, Joey Ortiz, Caleb Durbin, Oliver Dunn, Vinny Capra, Andrew Monasterio. From what we saw today and what we've seen so far in spring training, the Brewers have not been committal of, are they going to keep Bryce at second? Are they going to move him to short? Are they going to keep Joey at third? Are they going to move him to short? The reason why the Brewers have not been committal about it is they know Bryce Terang can play short because he was in their system. They also know Joey Ortiz can play short because he was scouted as such and played third out of a necessity. The reason why they would hold the base, like, what do you want to move the platinum glover off of second base to shortstop? Here's the reasoning for it. You can keep Joey Ortiz at third, who is a great defender. It doesn't matter if he's at short or at third. He's a great defender at either spot, just like Bryce is a great defender at second or short. The reason you could do that alignment is depending on how it fits better for Caleb Durbin or Vinny Capra or Andrew Monasterio or Oliver Dunn, even though he doesn't really considered a second baseman at second base. Pat Murphy has been very honest about the fact that the way that this race is going to shake out is more about that third position, meaning not about Terang or Ortiz and their quality of play at shortstop, because both of them are well, well above average defenders and can handle shortstop. It's a matter of, okay, do we pull a little bit down from short or rather from second or from third in order to put Ortiz and Terang wherever they put them? So it's a matter of, is Durbin good enough to play every day second base if Terang slides to short? Or is Durbin and Dunn the ideal platoon at third? Or is it somebody else like a Capra, like a Monasterio, that's going to be playing more third base, maybe with Oliver Dunn? That is what it's all about. So I don't want people to get confused about the fact that, oh my God, they're moving Bryce Terang. Like, it's not because they feel poorly about Joey or about Bryce in their current positions or as a shortstop. It's how does it fit for the other guy that it impacts, the acquired Durbin, Dunn, that sort of thing. Here's how Pat Murphy sees it briefly.
Yeah, I don't think Dunn will play a whole lot of second. Durbin will play both for right now. Durbin is hands, feet, experience. Dunn is, you know, one of our most talented players, period. He's got a chance to be a great defender at third or even first.
And even first, that's another piece of this puzzle for Oliver Dunn. He did get some reps at first base at the end of spring training last year. And I know some people probably scoffed at that line. He made us all eat our lunch today. He went 3-for-3 with a homer today. He had one of his best games in spring training. Now, we're not going to overreact. It is spring training, just like Vinny Capra having a 2-homer game on Saturday in the Cactus League opener. But to see Oliver Dunn healthy after what he went through with his back last season, I caught up with him earlier this week while he was hitting batting practice and how much better he feels and what he went through with his back last season, and just sort of jumping from Double A to the big leagues was difficult for him. Pat Murphy agreed that they kind of fed him to the Sharks there in April, and that's hard for any player, let alone a guy that is not only jumping from Double A to the show, but in a brand new organization doing it, and probably until 3 days before opening day, thought he was bound for Nashville if it wasn't for Garrett Mitchell breaking his finger at the very end of camp last year. So that goes to show you how much camp we really do have to play. If it were up to me, I'd go platoon at third with Durbin and Dunn, Ortiz at short, Terang at second, Hoskins at first. That's just me. And that's what we saw today. Also, we saw William behind the plate. The outfield would be some combination of Churio, Mitchell, and Frelick. And I imagine Yelly will be DHing at the start of the season. Yelly has been a full participant in outfield drills and running around and running the bases. And he wants to still play left field to stay sharp, which would mean in those days, maybe Sal's a DH or maybe Garrett is a DH. And they put Sal in center and Churio in right. And then you can pinch hit Garrett when that tough lefty comes in, and you bring in Mark Canna, you bring in a righty off the bench. So that's how I see things right now, and just quick explainer of why the infield doesn't seem as open as shut as it may assumed to be. Up next, we're going to talk to one of those candidates, Joey Ortiz. We're going to talk about his season last year, another guy that got married in the offseason too, and just overall how confident he feels wherever they put him. A very coy and honest conversation with Joey. That's coming up next. Hour number two continues after this on 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back on Brewers Weekly. I'm Dom Catronio. We're with Joey Ortiz here from spring training at American Family Fields of Phoenix. Joey, this is camp number two now with the Brewers. Take me back to when you first walked in the doors last year versus the guy that walked in the doors this year now as an established big leaguer and trying to find your role into 2025.
It's definitely more comfortable. I wasn't having to come in and meet a bunch of new people, and which everyone made it pretty easy last year, and everyone was so welcoming. But this year is a lot more comfortable. Finally got a little bit of time under my belt, so I kind of know what I need to be ready for and all things of that nature. But yeah, it's definitely more comfortable.
As you rolled into the season last year, April had some sporadic playing time, and for somebody who hadn't spent a lot of time in the big leagues prior to that, it's difficult. Well, something that Pat Murphy told us in the media is that it's not fair for somebody who is trying to put his foot in the door to not really get a chance to play every day. How difficult really is that until you kind of grabbed hold of third base in May that, okay, this is my role and I got to find at-bats where I can?
It's hard, but I mean, the game in general is hard, so I think in the position I was in early, I was just trying to do my best to stay ready when I was needed. And I got the job to play every day, still the same thing. I mean, you got to stay ready all the time. It doesn't matter where you're playing, whether you're not, whether you're on the bench or whatever. I think the more locked in you can stay, the better your career is going to be if, you know, they need you off the bench or anything like that.
Offensively, how do you assess your year last year? It kind of felt the tale of two halves. What did you see from last season?
I agree with the tale of two halves. I mean, the first half I felt really good. The second half I kind of sputtered out and wasn't happy at all with the way I was hitting. But I think getting that first kind of year under my belt now, you kind of understand how to deal with the failures and things of that nature. So just go from there.
When you were locked in, you know, May and June is what I think of for you. What are the things that you pull from that you try to think that say, hey, this is something I can do every day, or this is something that is who I am. It isn't like a flash in the pan. What are the things that you draw from those best months of your season?
Just enjoy them, really. I mean, the game is so up and down. You fail a lot, and I've actually heard Yelly say a lot, when you're playing well, enjoy it, because you never know when you're going to go in a slump and do all this stuff that, like normal baseball players do. But yeah, I just try and enjoy it. And then when you're not playing well, do the best you can to do your work, get your work in, and put yourself in a good position to play well.
One of the things that we'll be monitoring all camp long is who's going to be playing short, who's going to be playing third. Obviously, you and Bryce have a great relationship, and he's the platinum glover at second base. There's a lot that goes into all of this decision. How would you describe yourself as a shortstop, knowing that's a position you arguably have the most experience in before you joined the Brewers?
I'm ready to play any position. It really doesn't matter whether it's third, short, second. Wherever they set me, I'm going to give it my best. And I'm sure Bryce is the same way. If they put him anywhere other than second, I'm sure he's going to give it his best. And we're both ready to play wherever they need us.
How much pride do you take in the whole team's defense? Obviously, you're known as a great defender, but as you arrived and you heard about the Brewers' defense being such a calling card for them and seeing what they were able to produce last season and being a part of that?
Yeah, I mean, you come in, you see how good everyone is defensively and how important it is in the game. I mean, the better defense you play, the more games you're going to win, I feel like. So I feel like everyone really took pride in their defense, made sure that they were at their best, and it pushed me to be my best, which is good. We take a lot of focus in it, which is good for the pitching, and defense wins ball games.
On a lighter note, you know, you finally got that first home run ball, and one of the jokes was Connor Dawson had to shave into a mustache. And I know you're still rocking the mustache here in spring training. Can you give us any further backstory on, A, your facial hair and what you do with it all the time, and B, how satisfying it was to win that bet with Dawson?
Yeah, my facial hair is going to change a million times throughout the year. I get so bored with one set of facial hair after a week that I just try and do something new. As far as the bet goes with Dawson, I think one of these days throughout the season, he said if I hit a home run that day, he'd do a mustache. Ended up hitting a home run. He did the mustache. He hated it because he's a beard guy. So we might have to do that again sometime this year.
Now let's stay on the lighter note here. One of the things that I'm going to be asking around the clubhouse is one of the jokes of this young team is felt like half the team got married this past offseason, yours included. So take me back to your wedding. What was the best thing about your wedding day that you were going to remember forever?
That it was small, intimate. We had only family there, only immediate family, which was great. It wasn't expensive. I know some people feel they need to have big, extravagant weddings. Luckily, my wife and I agreed that we didn't. It was more just about the people we had there with us and obviously us getting married and having that time together, which was great. Yeah.
Best thing about your wedding, as not as far as like the family part of it, but something that was at the wedding, some sort of feature you did, something that you guys felt like, whoa, that was something really cool.
Probably the place we went to for dinner. We got a private room in the back. It was literally sunset in Arizona as well, you can't beat the sunset here. The steakhouse we went to was really good.
Have you gotten used to saying my wife yet?
No, I actually sometimes I say my girlfriend still or my fiance, and it's still new. Luckily, she doesn't know that, but I'm sure she will after this interview. But I'm getting used to it.
Congratulations on all of that. Hope you have good health and great success here in 2025.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
He's really fun to talk to. I enjoy my time with Joey. Very honest. Always has been forthcoming in his 2 years now here with the crew. And that's two guys down that we've talked to that have gotten married. Next up on the list, I've got to get to Brian Hudson, D.L. Hall. So there's a couple more guys we got to. Connor Dawson got married too. So even the hitting coaches are young, right? There's so much life milestones happening because the whole team's full of 20-somethings right now for the Brew Crew. Let's dive a little bit deeper into the way too early lineup projection. That's up next here on 620 WTMJ. Okay, we've still got about 35 minutes or so here in real time on WTMJ. We're going to do some way too early lineup thoughts here. We're going to talk about the rest of the roster questions that are still surrounding this team. We're going to give a preview for the upcoming week of what's going to happen, and then by then we should be out of time and get ready to say goodnight. Now, I've done this a couple of times now in the off-season shows of looking ahead to the lineup of what are the questions, what are we thinking about, what's going to actually happen on opening day. And then I realized something that's really important to remember. The Brewers, in their first six games this year, are likely going to face four lefties. So, opening day, the Yankees haven't announced it, but I'll announce it for them. It'll be Gerrit Cole on opening day, assuming he's healthy. right-handed pitcher. Then it'll probably be Max Fried on Saturday. Okay, left-hander. Then it'll probably be Carlos Rodon on Sunday. Left-hander. Okay, so what does that mean for the Brewers? Well, with Blake Perkins now out, that means your center fielder, Sal or Garrett, whomever it is, it's going to be left on left. And the Brewers are going to have to be okay with that. And not only that, when they come home to face the Royals, their projected rotation right now has two lefties in that, including their likely opening day starter in Cole Reagans. And Chris Bubich is left-handed too. He can make the team. He could be their four or five guys, so you could see him. There's a scenario where the Brewers see four out of five lefties in a row, right? The two against the Yankees, then maybe a lefty in Bubich, a righty, and then a lefty in Reagans. I mean, they have to be ready for the left-on-left stuff. And I know I talked about that a couple of shows ago here on Brewers Weekly, but we talked about it all last spring training, how much Sal and Garrett were getting left-on-left looks. Now, ultimately, Garrett got hurt, and it made Sal a prerequisite to get back into the outfield. And having Blake Perkins as a switch hitter was super helpful, but, well, for at least the first month of the season, Perkins is not going to be in this picture. So that's the first thing I'm going to be monitoring with the platoons and with the lineup thoughts, which also means how much playing time is a guy like Oliver Dunn going to get if he makes the team. Here's why you have to hesitate on Ollie making the team or not. The left-on-left stuff is something to keep an eye on, but he barely did it with the Brewers last season. Defensively, they've got a month to figure out who they like more between Dunn and between Durbin, if it is ultimately third base like I projected earlier in the program. He only got 7 plate appearances last year in the big leagues against lefties. He went 1-for-6 with 4 strikeouts. Whereas when you change that to his last season in the minor leagues back in 2023, now he spent enough time in AAA to think about that in 2024, but then the back injury, so I don't want to count that. When he split his time between in 2023, he spent the entire year in AA Reading in the Phillies organization at that time. When he was facing lefties there, he only got 76 plate appearances in AA against lefties, and the numbers are too small to really jump at. Now, a .267 batting average is something. A .421 on base is something. He drew 14 walks and only had 19 strikeouts in those 76 plate appearances. But that could be a case of small sample size or scouting report on the other guy. The point of what I'm trying to make here, Oliver Dunn is not going to get reps against lefties. And what the Brewers are always striving to do is put their players in the best situation possible, and that is platoons. And we'll talk about this with Matt Arnold in Friday's episode of Brewers Weekly this week. But just, this is where they operate, on the margins, on the edges of, if I can get my 6th batter's OPS up by 50 points, that upgrades our chances of winning by X amount of points, which thus changes our chances of getting 88 wins versus 84 wins by X when you extrapolate it over a season. There are people way smarter than you and I figuring these calculations out of the value of platoons, the value of where a guy hits in the lineup, the value of what kind of lefty. And the last lefty I got to talk about here in the left on left is Bryce Terang. And we saw Bryce in the lineup against lefties in postseason. That was partially because of necessity, and the Brewers needed to have their Platinum Glove winner in there as a defensive, you know, perk in order to, you know, feel confident. And then what did Bryce do in the playoffs last year? He reached base in all 3 games. He had 3 hits in game 1, 2 hits in game 2, and he also drew a walk and stole 2 bases in game 3. When it comes to Bryce, he needs to get reps against lefties because, in my opinion, I understand there's a little bit of a drop, not more than a little bit of a drop, in flat-out production for Bryce Terang against lefties. Simply put, he is arguably your best defender on the field. He needs to be an everyday player. And if you pull on that rung of a little bit less offense as a player against lefties, but you boost it with the defensive value of him playing every day, I'm in on that trade-off. He got more at-bats against lefties last year than he did in 2023. Now, granted, performance had a lot to do with that because he did take the quantum leap that we said over and over again. He only had 73 plate appearances in the 2023 season against lefties, and he nearly doubled that in 2024. Furthermore, he didn't hit a single extra base hit in his rookie year against a lefty. He had six of them. I know it's not a number that jumps off the page. He had six of them in 2024. His on base was still under 300 against lefties. That needs to get up. I don't need a 750 OPS out of Bryce Terang left on left. I'm not expecting that in the slightest. But if he could find a way to get that on base percentage somewhere in the 315 range, a league average, maybe a little worse than league average, sign me up, because that's all I'm asking for Bryce Terang. I don't care about Bryce Terang's homers. I don't care about his slugging percentage. I care about Bryce Terang's on base, because if he's on base at least 33% of the time, I know that can create maybe 50 stolen bases for him. You know, last season, I openly wondered, you know, he stole 26 bases with a 285 on base. I'll say that again. 26 steals with a 285 on base in his rookie year. But in 2024, he added nearly or more than 30 points to his on base percentage, 316, and stole 50 bases. So 30 points created double the stolen bases for him year over year. Can you get him to a 325 overall on base? Can you get him to a 340 overall on base? Now, we're talking Yelly territory if you go any further than that. But this team, its MO is going to be Bryce and Churio table setting these things. So my way too early lineup, I mean, I keep Bryce in the leadoff spot, including against lefties. You could argue, hey, let's put Churio in the leadoff spot against lefties because we know he can do it. He went yard off Sean Manaea in game two. I'm in on that. I can listen to that. But I need Bryce to get reps against lefties. So I'm going to watch him against lefties more now as opposed to Sal and Garrett, because now they need to face lefties out of necessity because of Perkins being out with his shin for the first month of the year. That's the number one thing I'm monitoring for the rest of spring training. How much left on left is Bryce going to get the chance to prove himself? Because Oliver Dunn is not going to get left on left reps. Garrett and Sal will have to, and maybe they will try to wane Garrett off of it and keep Sal on it. These are the ways that you get more playing time, prove that you can hit both arms of pitchers. When it comes to the rest of the lineup, I'm keeping Yelly in the three hole. I'm keeping William in the cleanup spot. I'm sliding Reese down to the sixth spot. I really like righty-lefty. We know the Brewers really enjoy that. And if you can find a way to keep this speed all the way through the order, right? So let's say they're facing a righty. Terang leading off, Churio second, Yelly third, Contreras fourth, Mitchell fifth, Reese sixth, Sal and Dunn 7-8, and that's where you can be interchangeable. And then you've got Joey 9. The reason why I have Joey 9 and not higher is because then if you have Joey up in the 7 or 8, then that's back-to-back lefties with the bottom of the order, or you flip Churio and Terang, but I keep Churio in the 2-hole because that's now where the best hitter on your team hits. That's a little ramble session about a way-too-early look at what I see from the lineup and what we're going to be monitoring. But how does that all fit with the roster? Are there actual battles to monitor on this team right now? That's coming up next here on 620 WTMJ.
WDTMJ's Eric Bilstead here for QC Kinetics. You know, I get a lot of questions about QC Kinetics treatments, people asking if they should consider it for their own joint pain. Well, here's how you know. If you answer yes to any of these questions, is your quality of life impacted by chronic pain in your knees or hips or shoulders or other joints, trouble sleeping or walking? Do you want to avoid surgery? A long recovery and uncertainty that comes with it. And most importantly, do you miss doing the things you love because joint pain is holding you back? If you answered yes to any of these questions, don't wait. Call now. Call QC Kinetics and ask for your free consultation and learn how the latest advances in regenerative medicine can help you get lasting relief. No drugs, no surgery, no downtime. 414-285-3474. Call QC Kinetics today for your free consultation. 414-285-3474. That's 414-285-3474. Call QC Kinetics today.
With the help of Les's Glass, you can have the shower you've always wanted. Heavy glass shower enclosures from Less's Glass are installed by the best in the business. And when you have a showroom to visit with over a dozen glass shower enclosures on display, there's no guessing games. See the ultimate in frameless shower design with doors mounted on smooth as silk, stainless steel barn-style rollers. This design combines the beauty and elegance of heavy glass with a minimalist look to create an ideal shower enclosure for tight spaces. Premium shower doors and custom-designed all-glass enclosures. When you work with Less's Glass, you're working with a company that really can do it all. This is Stacy Sinks with Less's Glass Service. If it's a new glass shower door, fogged or broken insulated glass replacement, or affordable glass and mirror home decor that you've been looking for, you just can't pass on Less's Glass. Less's Glass Service, serving all of southeastern Wisconsin. Find us at lessglassservice.com.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Going to the top of the hour. Still going. Still talking Brewers baseball. We'll do it again on Wednesday, and we'll do it again on Friday. I'm Dom Catronio. You can listen on podcast form as well. Brewers All Access is the name of the feed. If you don't catch all of the live show here on the radio, on YouTube, online, wherever you can find us. Let's talk about the roster a little bit, how it's currently constructed, and what are the things to keep in mind, specifically with the position players, as to who's going to make the team on opening day. And a reminder, the opening day roster and lineup always look very, very different by the end of the season than they do on the start of the season. In fact, let me just read you the batting order. Game one last season against the Mets, mind you, facing a lefty in Jose Quintana. Jackson Chourio became one of the youngest players ever to lead off opening day as a 19-year-old, making his major league debut. They went Chourio 1, Contreras 2, Yelich 3, who also homered in that game off Quintana. Hoskins cleanup, Adames 5th, Perkins started, batting 6th and center. Joey Ortiz started at second base, hitting 7th, right? Terang didn't even start opening day because of the fears of left-on-left, which is what we just spent the whole last segment talking about. Gary Sanchez hit 8th as a DH, and then Andrew Monasterio got the start at 3rd base because of the lefty, batting 9th, okay? It's going to change so much between now and the end of the season. The Brewers, in total, they used so many different batting orders. 162 games. They had a different batting order in 140 games. I'm going to say that again. 162 total games in a season, right? They only had repeated lineups in 22 of those games. The most common lineup was the one that we kind of just reiterated in some fashion. Terang leading off, Contreras hitting second, Yelich hitting third, Adames hitting fourth, Bowers fifth, Ortiz sixth, Frelick seventh, Chourio eighth, Perkins 9th. That was the most common lineup used by the Brewers last season, and it was only used in 5 games. So much is going to change. And one of the things that we have to remember about the Brewers on opening day this year is, how is the bench going to shake out? You can already lock in a spot for Eric Haas. Your backup catcher locked in, and they're going to carry 2 catchers. I don't think this is going to be like last year where Gary was half catcher, half hitter. They're going to give William more days off, I imagine, this year as a DH. We actually had a great conversation today with William Contreras. Adam McAlvey just had the write-up on MLB.com about William's insane work ethic. Really highly recommend you read that. Really fun conversation with William on that regard. But sidetracked. On the bench, 4 spots available. Lock in Eric Haas as one of them. I think it's almost a lock. I don't want to lock it yet, but I think it's very likely Caleb Durbin makes this team. The only reason he wouldn't, remember, he has all 3 option years remaining, is if Vinny Capra continues to have a great spring. Now, we're not overreacting to just 1 game, but the other thing that's working in Vinny's favor is the fact that he has no options remaining. Why would that work in his favor? Well, are they going to have him play all spring and then cut him at the end, a la they did Eric Haas last season? I don't know. There's a reason they kept Vinny Capra on the roster all offseason long. They believe in him, and hitting 2 home runs on Saturday certainly helps that cause. And also, Vinny can play short. He's not Bryce, he's not Joey, but he's your break glass in case of emergency ability to play shortstop. And because all four of your outfielders are probably going to be in the lineup every single day until Blake Perkins returns, you know, if Yelly is DHing, Churio, Frelich, and Mitchell are going to be in the outfield, or maybe one of those guys is DHing, whatever. They're all in the lineup, so you don't have an extra outfielder on the bench, which could be the route for Mark Canha to make this team. Again, he's a non-roster invitee. He's not going to play a ton of outfield, in Pat Murphy's own words earlier today, but an ability to play first base, ability to be behind the plate, and then that also leaves Tyler Black. So let's go over this of what's one bench alignment that we could see. Eric Haas, Vinny Capra, Mark Canha, Caleb Durbin. Now that's including Tyler Black as the designated hitter. That actually has Tyler Black down in AAA. Or let's say Black makes the team and instead Durbin is the one in AAA. You could do that as well, but you still keep Vinny Capra on that bench because he's your new utility man. And Andre Monasterio, who can still be optioned. Mana has all three of his option years remaining. He never got optioned last season. I think that's shocking. He got a full year of service time last year because they always needed some sort of depth, some sort of in case of emergency infielder. And they can option Mona to AAA. They can keep Capra without his options in the big leagues. And then when the time comes, if they want to make a change, it would have to be putting Capra through the waiver wire, given he is out of options. That is certainly an option for the Brewers to figure out for how they want to shake out this bench. Because if Tyler Black proves he can be a viable backup first baseman, being a left-handed bat, things get complicated. And quite frankly, Mark Canha's timing could work out very well for him. This team is extremely left-handed as it stands right now. Now, Yelly obviously is not a platoon player. Garrett Mitchell, we talked about it, is going to have to play against lefties a little bit, but if they get a tough left-on-left matchup that they really don't like for Garrett, maybe then Mark Canha comes in the pinch hit for him or for Tyler Black. If Tyler is DHing that day and Canha can play first base, he can DH if needed. To have an entire bench that's right-handed, I think, is going to be a priority for the Brewers, especially given, like we talked about a few minutes ago, four of the first six games are likely going to be against lefties, and the Brewers, as we have seen the last few years, have tried to play the percentages and try to, you know, platoon their way to 93 wins over and over again. That's how I feel about the bench. I think we need to take Vinny Capra very seriously as an option to make this team. And don't forget the fact that, he hasn't done anything in the big leagues. Well, he doesn't have any options remaining. So you got to find out if you have something there or if you don't. And having a viable backup, and there's still a month to go in spring training. A lot can change between now and then. I keep an eye on Vinny. Just do not forget about my cousin Vinny. I'm joking. Anyway, moving on. An overall offensive outlook. And we're going to talk to Reese on Wednesday. We're going to talk a little bit more about the offense and what works. You know, he's been on a team that slugs homers 24/7. The Brewers have had teams that hit homers. In fact, I think a couple years ago, they were top three in baseball in home runs hit, but didn't do anything in the playoffs. In fact, didn't even make the playoffs in 2022. Last year, they shifted the other direction. What does that mean? Talk about that after this on WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Let's talk a little projections, shall we? We've done that plenty on the program over the offseason while we're waiting for games to return. And, well, games have returned. And what have we learned about projecting the Brewers into 2025? I'm Dom Catronio. We're going for another 10 minutes or so here on WTMJ Talking Brewers. If you thought the Brewers ran a lot last season, hold my beer. They're going to run even more this season. A year ago, the Brewers were second in baseball with 217 stolen bases. The difference, though, is they were only six back of the Washington Nationals in total stolen bases. Okay, so the Nationals were a team that didn't win more than 81 games. They're kind of rebuilding to the future. They're right on it. They had nothing to lose when it came to stealing bases. Well, the Brewers had 31 fewer caught stealings. The Brewers had a much more successful clip than the Nats. In fact, among the three teams that stole at least 200 bases, the Brewers were the most successful. And the Reds, being at 207, is heavily skewed by Elly De La Cruz having 67 a year ago, leading the major leagues in stolen bases. while also leading the major league in strikeouts with 218. But Elliott at 67, and there are only two other guys over 20, and that was Spencer Steer and Jake Fraley. Whereas the Brewers, it was a different story a year ago. At 217 stolen bases, obviously Terang led the way with 50, but then he had Perkins with 23, Churio with 22, Adames with 21, Yelich with 21, even in only half of a season. Frelick even had 18 in there. And so they had nine different players with double-digit steals, and Mitchell had 11 even in only 69 games last season. So there's still room for them to steal even more bags. Now, you can take away maybe six steals or so for Perkins since he's not going to be available for the first month of the season. Okay, Churio, confidence, maybe he can steal 25 again. If you give a full year for Yelich, that can get close to 30. You give a full year for Frelick, that can get to 25, hopefully. You give a full year for Durbin and Dunn, those guys aren't afraid to run. A full year for Mitchell, who's not afraid to run. They could steal as many, if not more, bases. Tyler Black, haven't even mentioned him. He can steal a bag. See what I'm saying here? Their success is not going to be relying on the home run. And I know that annoyed some pockets of the fan base last season that they didn't hit that many home runs. Now, they didn't hit that many home runs comparatively to years past. Home runs are still extremely important. I'm not trying to downplay home runs. But if you're not going to hit home runs, like we don't project the Brewers to hit a ton of, you got to replace it with something else. And the Brewers are going to replace it with stolen bases. If the Brewers were stealing 140 steals like the rest of the league, then there'd be a cause for concern. But if you're going to be right around 160 to 180 home runs, right around that league average mark for homers, but you're exemplary in on-base percentage and exemplary in stolen bases and making it chaos for the opposing team. I mean, the Brewers were fourth in all of baseball in on-base percentage last year. It went Diamondbacks, Dodgers, Yankees, Brewers. And how quickly we forget that the Brewers were one of the top run differential teams in Major League Baseball last season. And they're returning most of the club. I just don't understand how the prognosticators see this roster and think it's going to be even worse. Now, I'm not ignoring Willie. 30 home runs is a lot of home runs. They're still finding creative ways to fill in that production. And they're going to do it with doubles and stolen bases. And it's not as sexy as hitting home runs. I understand that. But if the Brewers are going to have a team that is built on athleticism, built on athletes, built on speed, they're going to steal. And that's what I'm looking forward to most in the 2025 season. And just to finish the thought on the run differential, the Brewers had the third best run differential in all of Major League Baseball last season. Number one, the Dodgers, no surprise. Number two, the Yankees, no surprise. Number three, the Milwaukee Brewers. And that's with less than league average home runs. That's with all the stolen bases they had. Fangraphs still projects them as a 500 team. No chance. I really believe in this team. I think it is going to be in the upper 80s once again. It could get 93 again. And then in 6 months' time, all the prognosticators are going to be like, why did we count out the Brewers once again? The computers were wrong. Just open your eyes. Just look at the team from last year. My goodness. Just don't understand why that's so hard. I will say the Cubs got better. The Reds are healthy. The Cardinals, their bullpen sneaky good, and they kept a few pieces. I don't know what they're doing. Pirates pitching scares me, and they got more on the way. Bubba Chandler, he's coming up. The Cardinals have a top prospect coming up. I mean, Chase Burns with the Reds. There's good pitching in the division. It's going to be a very fun division. And needless to say, Kyle Tucker, Ryan Pressly down in Chicago. I'm in. Sign me up. Let's have a fun year, eh? Let's wrap up this first program after this as we say goodnight and give you what's to come up next on WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, one show down, two more to go. I'll be making appearances throughout the week and throughout all of spring training, really, on our variety of programming on WTMJ. I know I'll be on Spanning the State tomorrow and Midday News tomorrow. I'll be on Morning News on Wednesday. Maybe we'll slide over to our friends at ESPN later this week, either KBN or Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. We'll find a way to to spread the love, talking Brew Crew in February. And I understand it was a pretty nice day back in Milwaukee today, too. And they announced the temperature of each home city, and including, of course, the first pitch temperature in the ballpark. So the first pitch, 111. Game time temperature is 78 degrees. Game time temperature in Milwaukee, 51 degrees. Game time temperature in Seattle, 47 degrees. I'm like, hey, what a no against Seattle. Like, I mean, hey, what a day. So shout out to everybody back in Milwaukee. I hope to see y'all down here at American Family Fields of Phoenix. It's a great ballpark, man. The whole Cactus League. I've said this before, say it again. It's so much better than the Grapefruit League because every ballpark is accessible within an hour of each other. And obviously not the same in the big expanse of Florida. And, you know, the Brewers have a handful of night games this year, too. So you can pull off a double dip where you see a day game somewhere else. Maybe you want to go see Scottsdale Stadium or Salt River Fields, and then the Brewers play a night game somewhere. Go catch the night game and really enjoy yourself. So if you haven't made plans, come on down here one day. I think you'll really enjoy yourself. And for the kiddos, you're right up close and personal on the backfields with the big leaguers. And I explained it today on Wisconsin's Morning News. Like, you can watch Jacob Mizorowski pitch to Garrett Mitchell for free behind a chain link fence, you know, like you're watching a Little League game. That access is the best part about spring training. As for the rest of the week, I mentioned it earlier in the program, we're going to have, scheduled to have, Reese Hoskins and Aaron Ashby join us for more of an extended conversation for Wednesday. Scheduled to have Matt Arnold join us for Friday, and also have a shorter interview with Christian Yelich, too. I know he's sick of repeating himself at this point, Camp, and plenty more analysis and plenty more of you. So thank you to everybody who listened here tonight. Big thank you to our producer, Nate Rilling, helping us out, working from 2,000 miles away from me. I'm Dom Cotroneo. Keep on swinging.